Maine's fledgling charter schools, what are their lessons so far? It's a new school year and even newer start for the charter schools in Maine. The state now has 5 charter schools up and running, and today on Maine Calling, we will hear from some of those involved in getting them off the ground. How is it going for these publicly funded, independently run schools? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Joining me in the studio, Richard Barnes, a founding member and former vice chair of the Maine Charter School Commission. Kelly Pryor, board chair of Baxter Academy for Technology and Science. And Glenn Cummings, president of the Maine Academy of Natural Sciences. We invite you to join the conversation. Email talk at mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, post to our Facebook page, or give us a call. 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Charter schools, are they providing a needed option for families in Maine? This is Maine Calling.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listeners and by Nome Landscapes, dedicated to enhancing outdoor living in Maine with installation, design, masonry, and maintenance. NomeLandscapes.com.
Glenn Cummings, Richard Barnes, Kelly Pryor, thank you all for being here on Maine Calling. Richard, there are now 5 charter schools in Maine. I'm going to name them. Tell me if I get them wrong. Cornville Regional Charter School, the Maine Academy for Natural Sciences, opened 1 year ago. Baxter Academy for Technology and Science, Fiddlehead School for Arts and Sciences, and Harpswell Coastal Academy, all opening this week. Is this where you and other members of the Maine Charter School Commission had hoped and planned to be at this point?
Yes, pretty much. We didn't start with any great number in mind when we started as a charter commission 2 years ago. We knew we were going to have 10 schools within 10 years. That was the allocation in the law. And we felt that we wanted to start deliberately and try to roll out as many good proposals as we could. And with the idea of trying to, as people became familiar with the concept of public charter schools and began to see them in operation, that there would be perhaps more interest and more applicants. And indeed, we've seen that with 7 more in the wings applying to become charters potentially for next year.
So 7 more in the wings. There remains a cap at 10, correct?
Yes, that's correct. Given the present law, even if all 7 of these applicants looked to be terrific and met basically our criteria, we would only be able to authorize 5 of them. So in anticipation of that, we went through a full review of our RFP process and have now created a different rating system with the anticipation that we might have to make choices between 2 good proposals. And be able to fund only 1.
And when do you hope to have the decisions for the next round?
Well, the applications aren't due until December, and we will make decisions. The commission will make decisions by March 1st. And then between March 1st and the summer, we will go through contract negotiations for any successful new ones to be able to open in September 2014.
All right. Well, Kelly, this is the first day of school at Baxter Academy. It was down to the wire on a few levels, but you're in. Tell me about the student body of the first class and the mission of the school.
Well, the mission of the school is STEM education, project-based learning.
And STEM is science, technology, engineering, math. Yeah.
Yes, it is. And we have 132 students at Baxter Academy today from 35 different towns in the state. It's a very diverse population of kids. We've attracted a lot of homeschoolers and kids whose families don't necessarily speak English at home, athletes, musicians. It's a very well-rounded, eclectic bunch of kids, and they're very excited to be in that building today.
Is it what you expected the student body to look like?
We didn't know what to expect. We just knew that we kept being approached by very curious kids who were interested in learning with their hands often and were active and felt like they were bursting at the seams in a regular school setting. So Baxter Academy was attractive to them and to their families. And so I think that the fear initially was that it might attract just a bunch of math whiz kids and top students from other schools, when in fact I think we have top students and we have students who have struggled and need a different way to learn, and that's what they're coming to Baxter for.
All right. Well, Glenn, Maine Academy of Natural Sciences opened as a charter school a year ago, but it was already a magnet school. Tell me about the philosophy of the school and what you've learned in the past year of operating as a charter school.
Thanks, Jennifer. First thing, I want to go back to the Charter School Commission. They have worked incredibly hard. And just speaking on the other side of Dick's equation, their process for letting in charter schools, in our minds anyway, was rigorous, thorough. We had to contract with them, as Dick had talked about. They've had three site visits to our school, and their their support and also their guidance and recommendations and commendations have been very, very helpful. But I have to say the process was really rigorous. We ended up submitting an application of almost 700 pages. It was thorough. It's not just about sort of laying out your curriculum and saying, you know, we're going to open the doors on this day. It was a very, negotiated set of outcomes, et cetera, that got us going. There was a lot of financial discussions about, how strong are you, how is your vitality economically and fiscally. So we definitely have went through a rigorous process. Our focus is on students who have a strong interest in the environment, have a strong interest in agriculture, forestry, environmental principles of sustainability. We like to focus on students who may be struggling for whatever reason, not necessarily even academically. And I think that's one of the surprises that we're finding is that we are attracting students of all stripes. So we're attracting students who have done extremely well academically, but for whatever reason, sort of grown beyond the sociology of high school, the culture of high school, that they may feel like they have a deep interest in environmental issues. So I think that's our first sort of piece of learning. The second is that we feel like we've gotten an enormous amount of, surprisingly enough, a very strong amount of support from superintendents across the state or school districts across the state who say, you know what, if we can't find the right fit for this particular student and we can make it work at your place, we understand. And I think that's been very helpful. And I think the last surprise for us has been that both Democrats and Republicans in the legislature have been supportive of our mission. The adage that I had mentioned earlier that, Democrats hate charter schools for all the right reasons and Republicans like charter schools or love them for all the wrong reasons, that I don't think is true in Maine. I think what we've discovered is that there was an extremely thoughtful set of discussions on both sides of the aisle about how to implement charter schools and how to make it fair both to the public schools and to us.
If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number is 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Richard, now that five schools are up and running, what will the commission be looking for from them? How will you judge their success?
That's a really good question, because the other half of what the commission has to do, in addition to authorizing the school, is to have oversight over the school. And in fact, we have just within the last few weeks done our first annual review of Means Academy. And what we did with Means and with Cornville a little earlier in the summer was to take a look at everything that's in that contract that the school has said they want to do and that has been agreed to in the contract. And then we try to go in with asking the school to provide us data on student test scores and assessments. They have to take all the same assessments that any other school has to do in Maine. They have to meet the Common Core standards the way other schools in Maine have to do. And they're allowed a lot of latitude over how they deliver it, how they divide up the school day. But at the end of the day, they have to be able to give us the data about how they've done with the students. And in this first year of Means Academy in Cornville, and presumably also with the new three schools, we're going to give them some time to get it all sorted out. But we are expecting them to get a lot of baseline data on student performance, how the students are doing when they come to the school, so that we can have some yardstick to measure them against in the coming years of their contract. We also look over their financial data. We want to make sure that the teachers they hire are either certified in Maine or certifiable. The law requires it says that charter schools are exempt from many of the state laws, but actually there are very few that they're exempt from. They're given permission to go beyond what normal public schools can do and how they innovate their teaching. The length of their day or the length of their school year means, for example, goes year-round, and they have a four-day week. Public schools are not really authorized to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so whatever they have stated within their contract that they say they're going to do, we want to come in twice a year formally, and then quarterly we get other reports from them to see how well they're doing. We also take a hard look at their financial data, because one of the biggest causes of failures of charter schools nationally is inadequate financial backing and financial management and controls.
Well, Kelly and Glenn, I want to ask you both the same question. And I'll start with you, Kelly, for Baxter Academy. By what standard will you judge the success of the school?
Well, that's an interesting question. There will be several. Most importantly, how the students feel about their education. Every student at Baxter Academy will have an individualized learning plan. It began over the summer. The teachers, the head of school, sat down with each student and their parents, and they talked about what the students hoped to get from Baxter and what the students were bringing to Baxter, what they thought they had to share with Baxter. And so our curriculum began to develop around the interest of the kids, the entire elective slate. They take core classes in engineering, English, math, science, and social studies. But then their electives were in response to what the kids said they wanted and what the teachers said that they could bring to the kids. So we have Mandarin Chinese, chess, introduction to the documentary, Java programming, a spreadsheet masterclass, songwriting. So we're paying a lot of attention to what will motivate these kids to embrace their education and learn. We'll also be testing and looking at the results of those tests. We believe that project-based learning teaches kids to problem solve, and that will be reflected in the testing as well as in their feelings about the success of their day at the school.
Will you expect them to do better in their testing than in a typical public school?
We expect to see growth in their testing results as we would with any other group of kids. We think that learning to problem solve with on a daily basis can have an impact on how you test as well.
And Glenn, what are the standards by which you judge the Maine Academy for Natural Sciences?
Well, obviously the things that we've contracted for and committed to publicly with the commission around academic growth, we're seeing that all students will be able to demonstrate the common core of learning and the Maine learning results, our version of that here in Maine, that we don't expect our students to be exempt from any of that. And what our strategy will be from an instructional point of view is, can we find interesting real-world ways to demonstrate mastery of those common core? So maybe it's planting an acre of corn and learning how to bring it to fruition and how to market it. Maybe it's building a building on campus. Maybe it's finding ways to contribute in some kind of service to the community. The second piece, of course, is post-secondary education. We're in a unique position where we have a college on campus. Kennebec Valley Community College has moved their main campus to our campus, and so we literally live on the same campus as a college. We expect every student, whether they say they want to go to college or not, to take at least one college course before they leave. So those two kind of basic core issues are very much important to us. But there are bigger issues for us. We expect them to be able to problem solve, to collaborate with each other, to learn how to work in groups, to communicate well in a variety of forms, to self-manage tasks, and to have deep environmental principles and commitments to sustainability.
All right. Well, thank you very much. We're going to take our first short break. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
When the town of West Texas blew up, it unveiled a lack of information about chemical accidents.
The things that are not being collected as data are frequently horrifying accidents that kill people. But no one in Washington wants to talk about how to keep track of it.
What's going on and how to fix it. I'm Steve Kerwood, and that's next time on Living on Earth from PRI.
Tune in for Living on Earth, Sunday morning at 7 a.m. MPBN is a media sponsor for Maine Fair 2013, hosted by the Maine Farmland Trust in downtown Belfast this Friday and Saturday. This year's event includes tastings, tours, classes, dinners, and more, featuring Maine food and farms, culture, and natural history. General admission is free, but for ticketed events, MPBN members are entitled to a 10% discount. For information about Maine Fair 2013, including the schedule for tomorrow and Saturday, location, and how to purchase your member discount tickets, visit mpbn.net and click on Events. Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listeners and by Darling's Audi in Bangor, working to help Mainers rediscover the joy of driving with 10 new Audi models, darlingsaudi.com, and by RM Davis, Inc., providing investment management, trust services, and financial counsel to generations of clients throughout New England, rmdavis.com.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Charter Schools. With me in the studio, Kelly Pryor, who is board chair of the Baxter Academy for Technology and Science, Richard Barnes, a founding member and former vice chair of the Maine Charter School Commission, and Glenn Cummings, president of the Maine Academy of Natural Sciences. We'd like you to join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Email talk at mpbn.net. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We're going to start with Mariah in Bath. Mariah, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Thank you, dear. I am an old lady, but I was a teacher with five kids and head of a little alternative school a long time ago. But what troubles me is that if we're going to help kids learn about the environment and how to take care of it, we cannot separate them into a special school. I mean, we should have the school for all of our children, not these special schools, because they think they can teach children about the environment, help them learn about the environment. But why can't we do it for all our schools? What they are doing now is taking money away from our public schools. Well, I'm an old mother and teacher, so I'm sorry if I sound angry, but I am a bit angry. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mariah. Glenn Cummings, it's the Maine Academy for Natural Sciences, which is really focusing on the environment. Do you agree with Mariah?
Yeah, Mariah, I agree that the environment is something that, you know, there's an increasing talk across the nation that, you know, at the higher education levels that a liberally educated person in this country should have, you know, obviously strong commitments to things like small d democracy, but it also now includes a commitment and understanding of sustainability that an educated person who calls themselves, you know, well educated needs to understand sustainability. And I agree that that has to be done on a universal level, K through 12. In terms of the direct question about, you know, special schools, at least from our perspective, we are trying to work with students who may not actually succeed, truly not succeed within the K-12 spectrum under traditional public schools, and want to try some strategies that may be difficult for regular schools, traditional schools to do. For example, we talked about our year-round calendar and going throughout the year, trying to be more outdoors focused and trying to do real world projects. Those are not always easy turnarounds for schools. Let us get out there and do some experimenting and trying that could help get all students over, you know, through K-12 successfully, and at the same time be a model for other school districts.
All right, go ahead, Richard.
I would address expand a little on what Glenn just said, and then also try to address the financing issue, because I know Mariah's concern has been voiced by many people throughout Maine. But it's not that public schools aren't trying to do things with the environment. Many are. But the thing with the charter school law was one of the precepts of it is to allow schools to come forward to try new practices, to innovate and provide examples for the state of other ways of being able to provide appropriate education for all kids. And one of the things that it's early in the experiment here in Maine, but I believe that Means Academy in Cornville, both in their first year, and now Baxter and the other two schools that are starting this year, will give opportunity for the public schools around them to find different ways they could provide an education for the students who choose to stay in the public school system. To briefly address the financial issue, these students, for the most part, are kids who are already being educated at public expense. A few of them do come from the homeschool environment, but most of them are transferring from another public school. These are kids that are being funded right now with taxpayer funds through the state of Maine and through their local community. All that's happening is that the funding for that child is following that child to a charter school. And the charter school does not get penny for penny, dollar for dollar, what the public school that the student comes from would get. The school, the charter school, has to provide all their own all their own facilities. There are many costs and expenses that are paid for by taxpayers and local communities that have to be raised by the parents and supporters of the charter school.
All right. Well, thank you, Mariah, for your question. We have two questions that are related. Glenn, I'm going to have you answer the first one. Question from Twitter. What is the difference between a charter school and a magnet school? Maine Academy has been both.
and actually, truthfully, we can still be both at the same time. So a magnet school is a school, can be in different contexts, can be a charter, it can be a traditional high school that has a particular theme to its mission. So, for example, it could be forestry and agriculture. It could be STEM, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. It could be healthcare, and it could be technology. So specifically, a magnet school has a theme. Now, we have one in the state called a magnet school. It's not a charter, technically. It is, but that's more complicated than we should get into. But basically, we have a magnet school. The Maine Math and Science School in Limestone is technically a magnet school in which students can go there for that particular purpose of their interest, strong interest in math and science. Charter schools are designated as usually a statutory or legally established entity that has a clear funding mechanism from usually public, in our case as a public charter school, has a funding mechanism from the state level and from the local level in our case. And it is chartered by the state of Maine, commissioned by the Maine State Charter Commission, and allowed to exist under Maine statute. So you can actually have both. We like to say we are a theme-based charter school.
All right, and I'll have you, Kelly Pryor, take the second question, which is related. Sarah writes by email, my husband and I attended a magnet school in New York City, and one of our sons attended the Maine School of Science and Mathematics, also a magnet school. We are very much in favor of magnet schools, and we would like a panelist to address why charter schools rather than magnet schools should be the wave of the future, since magnet schools could easily be configured to address special interest rather than just STEM.
Well, I think what's important about charter schools in the state of Maine as they're configured is that they are open to any student in the state of Maine. And it's very inclusive. That we don't have any criteria by which we judge whether the child should be admitted to the school. The child, if the child has the interest to come and the family wishes it, can come. And so we feel that that's very empowering for families to have the option to change their child's lives in a concrete way based on their own choice.
All right. Well, if you'd like to...
I want to jump
in
on that.
Go ahead, Richard.
Yeah. That there is a crucial difference, and it's already been stated by Kelly, but a magnet school gets to choose who enters and who does not. They could say, as the Maine School of Science and Math does, that we have two applicants, one of whom may have better potential by reason of their test scores or the interview process. We think the student is more committed. We're going to admit this student and not the other. Charter schools can't pre-interview anyone. The law says that you can have a focus. You can advertise that we are going to be agriculture-based or we're going to be STEM-based. But if a student applies who is not interested at all in either agriculture or STEM but wants a different way to approach they can apply, and the school doesn't interview or pre-select. I interviewed a student at our means review who said, I have no interest in agriculture whatsoever. I want to be a songwriter. Well, why did you come to means? I wanted a different way of learning.
Mm. All right. Well, if you'd like to join the conversation, it's 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Email talk at mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Going now to Stephen in Freeport. Stephen, go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much, Jennifer, for taking my call. I'm someone who has worked much of his life as an educator in both private and public schools on the secondary level and in higher education. And with charter schools being a fairly new thing in Maine, I found it a little hard to understand and to find out about specifics regarding the funding. This is another money question. My question has for your panel has two parts, really. I understand the concept of the public funding following the child from their home school district, but surely that is not the whole of the operating budget. What percentage of your operating budget to date is the funding that comes from the town or the local school unit, number one? And number two, what specifically are the sources of funding for the balance of your operating budget?
Glenn, I'm going to let you feel that one since you've been operating your charter school the longest,
yeah,
whole year.
I think that, and financial fragility is the name of that first year. Stephen, to go to your question, Stephen's absolutely right. The money in Maine is designated to follow the child, but we have to be careful about how that works. So just to give you an example, if the town of Westbrook is paying approximately $12,000 per child, I want to be really clear with our listening audience that that is not what gets transferred to the charter school. So there is actually a base amount that is established in state law that says Westbrook needs to fund at least X amount, usually $7,500 or $8,100. It depends on the taxpayer capacity. And that minimum state amount is actually what the charter school gets. So Stephen's question is right on point, which is obviously you're not getting enough to really pay your bills. How do you end up making that up? And I think what you've seen at Baxter, and you certainly have seen it with us, we have to go out and fundraise. We have to ask, you know, parents where possible to contribute on a volunteer basis if they can help do a fundraisers with us, et cetera. We ask for private donations from foundations. We talk to, you know, individual people of wealth that might have interest in what we're trying to do. And that's really how we end up trying to make up that balance. And it becomes really important because, quite frankly, we are not able to offer, you know, a JV lacrosse team right now, or even, quite frankly, even a soccer team. We have to stay very core focused on the academic curriculum and not have some of the extras that you might have in a K-12.
How difficult is it to balance fundraising from organizations like foundations, which have their own set of priorities, and remaining independent to your philosophy as a charter school?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's always a challenge with fundraising. You know what? You know, are there going to be influences from the outside? You know, our hope is to lay out that this is a chance to get kids to graduate from high school to have successful experiences where they haven't. And a lot of funders have really stepped up. They like that mission, and they want that to be their legacy by helping us out financially.
Okay. Well, Stephen, thank you for the question. We're going to go now to Mike in Portland. Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, in the end, you have to, the metric that which you measure student achievement by are a couple of things, and one of them is test score. Also, you're looking at the metrics, the measurements of how much it costs per student head. And to compare public schools to private schools, I think my concern is with the shadow kid, the kid that's barely getting by, that nobody pays attention to, he's not a troublemaker, or the kid whose parents don't care about them. They just want them out of sight. How do you reach those kids? And when you're looking at your student population, say at Baxter Academy, you're going to have an involved parent. You want somebody who's trying to get the kid there, or a motivated kid, one or the other, or hopefully both. Whereas you got a kid in a public school slipping by, might not do too well on test scores, but he's going to get through. So my concern is we're going to put money into this Baxter school or any other charter school that's not held, and it's hard to measure it, to the same standards as a public school and use test scores as a measurement, while we're taking away resources and funding for public school, it's just a really, how do we prevent elitism or look, we got all these charter schools, they're doing really well. Meanwhile, public schools are terrible, and they have to have mainstream and education act and fund that too.
Right, Mike. I think you're getting to the core of one of the biggest criticisms of the whole charter school movement is that it benefits the kids who are already in pretty good shape because their parents are so involved in their education. Kelly Pryor, would you like to respond to him?
I would, and I would just say that what we've seen at Baxter is that we have pulled kids from all across the spectrum. They aren't just geographically diverse, they're socioeconomically diverse. And they're kids who have a lot stacked against them in a lot of ways often. Not that there aren't kids who have a lot of advantages, and clearly they all have parents who have worked to get them this option and have exercised their right to come to the charter school. But we don't feel that we're taking anything away. We are just providing something different for kids who might need that. And I feel that there will be a lot of innovation going on in the charter schools that will redound to the benefit of everyone in the state, particularly around open source. Everything that we do at Baxter, we will share with anyone in the state. Teaching methods that work in a different way, innovations that we do in terms of distance learning. We are interested in building bridges back to the other public schools and benefiting everyone with what we're doing at Baxter.
All right. Well, Mike, thank you for your call. We're going to take another short break. When we return, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us.
On the next Fresh Air, some insights into cats. We talk with John Bradshaw, author of Cat Sense, how the new feline science can make you a better friend to your pet. Here's a tip. If your kitten is doing something it shouldn't,
you make the t-t-t-t noise that mother cats do when they're telling their kittens off.
Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock.
If you want to get really good at remembering things,
43. Okay.
Here's the trick.
27.
Okay. Create wild, outlandish, and therefore memorable images in your mind's eye. A ram bouncing into my parents' front door, which is 43.
Oh, you missed 11.
Oh.
Yeah.
It was pornographic.
The mystery of memory. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
And that TED Radio Hour, Memory Games, is our 1 p.m. program coming up after Maine Calling this afternoon at 1. As you know, many businesses and organizations in and around Maine join listeners in supporting various public radio programs on the MPBN radio service. To learn how your business can benefit from supporting MPBN, either on MPBN Radio or MPBN Television, visit our website, mpbn.net. Click on Business Support to find information about the value of sponsorship, answers to frequently asked questions, and contact information, or call us at 1-800-884-1717 and ask for Susan Tran. And of course, thank you for your support of public broadcasting here in Maine.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today, we're talking about charter schools in Maine. With me in our studio, Kelly Pryor, who is board chair of the Baxter Academy for Technology and Science, Richard Barnes, a founding member and former vice chair of the Maine Charter School Commission, and Glenn Cummings, president of the Maine Academy of Natural Sciences. We would like you to join the conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Richard, before we went to break, we were talking about sort of the one of the callers, Stephen, was really concerned that charter schools seem to benefit kids who already have a lot of parent involvement. And they don't really address and don't really address some of the bigger issues in education, which are how do you catch those kids who are going through the crack, falling through the cracks?
Well, one thing I could say is that that is an issue, and it's an issue nationally in all schools, charter schools, public schools, or anything else, is the unengaged, uninvolved parent. But one thing that it's a minor thing because we just have two charter schools that have operated this year, with fewer than 100 students in the two of them together. But one of the things that we've already started to see is that at the local level, teachers in public schools are talking to the teachers in the two existing charter schools about practices that are working. And despite all of the politics, people on the level that are most concerned with students are talking to each other. And as Kelly has said, Baxter intends to be open source about what it's doing. We've seen some early indications that the three new schools that we're opening, that people on the public school side are anxious to make connections with these charter schools to learn what they're doing with kids, that they might learn from them and share that. So it's the concern that Stephen and Mike expressed is certainly one that everyone in the charter school is very aware of and are anxious to take anything that they learn and share it.
Okay. Let me just add quickly to Mike's question. The issue of these shadow students is a huge issue in the country. It's certainly an issue here in Maine. The question is, how do you kind of bring those kids out of the shadows? And our philosophy has been there needs to be somebody at that school who knows that child and likes that child and knows them well enough to be able to bring out the best in them. And to some extent, we're in a position to do that. You know, we are beginning. We're focused on kids who we know sometimes are those shadow kids and that they aren't quite reaching their full potential. And a lot of it is pulling them back out and giving them that kind of confidence. And one of the ways that we can do that is, A, get to know them really well, and, B, adjust our curriculum so that we find where are those engagement points, where are those ignition points that the students say, I really like what I'm doing, and bring that out.
Here's a question from Lisa via Facebook, and I think this is probably going to pertain most to you, Glenn. It says, as a rural mother in a district struggling with reduced funding, we are told it's because it was diverted to charter schools. I share the concern of a recent caller. All children deserve access to an optimal education. I know that both the Cornville school and yours are in sort of the same region, and that the school district in that area believes it's losing a lot of money due to the two schools. Do you agree with that concern?
I think that's a really fair concern. I will qualify a little bit that we have from that local area, only about 40% of our students are actually from that local area. We have relatively small numbers from that area compared to Cornville. But Cornville obviously has been very much focused on Skowhegan, and that has really put a lot of pressure on the Skowhegan budget. There's no question about that. Now, in the legislature over the last year, there was an excellent proposal by Commissioner Bowen that said, why don't we bring all charter school students into the funding formula at the state level, in other words, into the EPS, the Essential Programs and Services model? Why don't we bring them all in and really take it off the local property taxpayer so that the charter schools don't have to contribute that percentage out of the get paid out of the local property tax base? That seemed like a very good solution to a political problem. It also seemed like a very solid solution to a financial issue. Unfortunately, the legislature did not execute that. I'm hopeful that they'll come back to that and really look at that compromise.
And there's a lot of legislation, several bills that are being talked about for this upcoming. This is an email from Anne in Biddeford. She says, will someone please address the logic of forcing Maine public schools to consolidate, which in many cases has forced the closure of small high schools, while also starting charter schools with a small student population? It seems counterproductive to close small public high schools only to open small select high schools. And she's saying high schools, but both Cornville and Harpswell are in schools that were closed very recently because of consolidation. Richard, is this something that the commission is thinking about or focusing on?
Well, the commission is concerned, obviously, as Maine's declining population is the primary driver for why schools are closing, not the consolidation effort, but it's the fact that enrollments are going down in many places. One of the things that several of us on the commission have talked about is the way in which charter schools could create a model for keeping relatively small schools that are particularly in rural parts of Maine, viable. Cornville is a good example. That's a school that was closed because its student population fell under 100, and the school district felt that with the model that they had for elementary education, it wasn't viable. But the community felt that they could make a viable school, and next year there'll be a school of 90 students, and they've made a go of being a school of 60 students this year. And we think that the option for a school district is to convert one of its schools possibly to a charter school, because the law allows school districts to create their own charter schools and to take what otherwise would be a school that's dwindling to a point where it couldn't succeed and turn it into a different kind of an entity. But it is a big problem.
All right. I think we have time for one more call. We'll go to Robert in Brunswick. Robert, go ahead.
Yes, I'd like to ask how many certified teachers right now are on the staff of this school?
Well, I'll have Kelly Pryor from Baxter Academy talk about that and then Glenn Cummings.
Well, one of the amazing and wonderful things at Baxter is that we were able to hire from over 300 resumes very committed, experienced teachers. And they have all been teaching in various places in Maine and from across the country. So they are at this point all certified teachers, except for a Mandarin language teacher who has an amazing background and will be working toward that.
And Glenn at Maine Academy.
Yeah, the same. We've been very fortunate. We do have very qualified teachers who have entered the market for us and will be stepping up again this year. And then we have a few new teachers as a result of our strong student growth. One of the key pieces of flexibility in the law does allow people with advanced degrees to qualify as qualified or acceptable teachers. And that's actually opened up a door. There are lots of people out there who may not officially be holding a certificate in their hand, but they may have a master's degree or have a special expertise in a particular career or field, like Mandarin Chinese, but that can be very helpful that otherwise would have to go through a fairly rigorous process and might be dissuaded from entering a traditional public school. So,
okay. Well, Robert, thank you for your question. And because that was a short question, I can ask you this one. Would charter schools, this is from Sean in Portland, would charter schools have the same support if Common Core had not been accepted? And briefly, Richard, can you talk about how Common Core has influenced the passage of some charter schools?
Well, I believe the Common Core had very little to do with the charter school movement in Maine or nationally. I know that the Common Core is becoming somewhat controversial as people find out about it. But Maine already had the learning results standards before they were replaced by the Common Core. And the charter schools here in Maine were going to follow the same rules, whether it was learning standards or the Common Core.
All right. Well, thank you. That's going to have to be the last word on a very interesting topic. Thank you all for being here. Richard Barnes, founding member and former vice chair of the Maine Charter School Commission, Glenn Cummings, president of Maine Academy of Natural Sciences, and Kelly Pryor, board chair of the Baxter Academy of Technology and Science, for Technology and Science, want to get that right. Today's program was produced by our volunteer Cindy Hahn and Jonathan Smith. Cindy also answered your calls. John Keimel ran the board, and we had help from the MPBN web team. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our podcast by visiting mpbn.net/Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.